Thank you for tuning in to the FactCheckVaccine.com audio stream podcast. If you find the following information helpful, please share it with others. And now we begin the audio stream.
Hi, I'm Dr. Ryan Cole. I'm a board-certified anatomic and clinical pathologist trained at the Mayo Clinic. I have subspecialty expertise in skin pathology and fellowship training in that as well. I run a full-service laboratory here in Idaho, the largest independent laboratory in the state of Idaho. And I treat patients and have seen patients in consultation for the last almost 18 years here from Florida to California, licensed in 12 states. And I am an expert in immunology and virology as well. One of my board certifications, clinical pathology, involves virology. I did a year of PhD immunology research, my first year of medical school as well. So virology and immunology, full lab medicine is what I do.
Well, you've been very generous with sharing your time and your expertise, and I appreciate you taking the time to be here today for sure. I'd like to pick your brain about how, if they are able to require these vaccines from healthcare professionals, how do you think that that is going to affect the hospital care or the urgent care or any kind of doctor care that we receive as patients? Do you think that we'll see shortages, or do you think that there's just not that many people who will refuse?
Well, let me start by commenting. We call these vaccines, but in the emergency authorization of these shots, they clearly are using off the term investigational vaccines. And that's an important point to make. And we are asking people, those nurses, those students, those employees, to be subjects in an experiment on humanity. This is a large phase 3 trial by getting this shot of something for which we do not know the long-term effects and side effects down the road. And we usually don't see those for 2, 3, 4, 5 years. In terms of shortages, forcing people to get this, there are people that value their bodily integrity. And as a hardcore scientist, I'm not political. I look at data. And when I look at the data, I'm already seeing the adverse effects from these shots in the laboratory setting. So these individuals who are subjecting themselves to this just to maintain a job, we're seeing it in young people, middle-aged people, old people. A lot of people are simply not going to get this shot. I've heard administrators from the system say, oh, we'll make you cave. You'll cave. I have plenty of nurses who have shared with me that that's the mantra within administration. We're going to make you cave. They won't. They will leave. They will stand for principle and their bodily integrity and their long-term health. And they have every right to do that, to not be a subject in human experimentation and coercion. So they're going to see huge staffing shortages, huge. I have a friend in Indiana reached out today and looked at a couple articles from there. There are already shortages in their staffing within their hospital system. They're trying to do the same thing. Another physician group out of Michigan, same thing. They already have shortages. Now they're going to have massive shortages. So this isn't just a mandate on employees of a healthcare system. This is a mandate and an attack on an entire community and an entire community's wellness and access to care. They pride themselves with these institutions to say, oh, we're here for the patient, we're here for the community. This clearly says they're not. It is literally the antithesis of that. They're flipping the script and giving a, you know, mellifluous commentary on how much they're here for us, but they're literally attacking us and our access to care because those nurses don't want their bodies damaged. They don't want their fertility damaged. They don't want their long-term immune health damaged. They don't want to increase their risk for cancers. But I'm seeing the signals in the laboratory already. They don't want to subject themselves to that, and they should not have to be coerced into an experimental shot, as it says in the emergency authorization, investigational vaccine, in order to maintain employment. This is a violation. We made a promise in 1947 after World War II that we never again would experiment on humanity or coerce anybody against their will. And literally, this is what we're seeing. I mean, there were Nazi nurses and doctors hung for doing exactly what we're doing to humanity right now, saying, you will participate in an experiment or else you will lose your job. And we are taking away the freedom and sovereignty of people over their bodies and their minds as well. We're doing this through, we've had three options this year. We've had fear, suffering, and vaccine. Really, the option is hope, early treatment, and immune wellness. And we as a society have been subject to, you know, a worse outcome of this disease because we haven't focused on some of the basic public health messages. Yes, as in some of the talks people have seen me give, we are a vitamin D deficient nation, magnesium and vitamin K2 as well. We're an obese nation, we're a metabolically unwell nation, and those have predisposed us to the poorer outcomes compared to other nations. And now we're trying to force people into a shot, and this is abject silliness, we're trying to force people into a shot for last year's virus. This is Delta. This is not Wuhan strain. This is Delta now. This is the India strain. But what you don't hear is Delta is a less malevolent virus. Yes, it's spreading faster, certainly, but it's less virulent. So this virus, if you look at the data out of India, and you don't hear this in the media, sure, it's a big nation, a lot of people, and their raw numbers of infection and hospitalization and death seem high, but statistically, their death rate was 1/7 that of the Western world. That's good news. Viruses acquire benevolent mutations over time. We call it Mueller's ratchet. As you look at the inbreeding of something over time, it becomes less strong. This same concept is happening with this virus already. Now, it's interesting to note that in the UK right now, there are about 15,000 documented breakthrough cases a day in the vaccinated by the Delta variant. The Delta variant, these vaccines, based on the statistical modeling one would have to do to get approval for these as an emergency authorization, this shot would not be authorized for Delta statistically right now. When we see this data out of Israel. The other important thing I think that we're leaving out is the fact that natural immunity is already broad across the nation. For every couple of cases that, you know, we document in the laboratory, there are multiple people who have had the infection. We are not screening before vaccine. The huge amount of adverse reactions we're seeing are people who are infected with virus and getting a shot while they're infected, and then the antibodies you form are attacking the organs in your body. Also, those who have already mounted an immunity against SARS-CoV-2, if they get a vaccine, they are multiple-fold increased risk of adverse reactions because they've already had COVID, they already have an immunity, and it puts their immune system in a hyperimmune response. So we're negating natural immunity. In Israel just last week, a study came out that showed in breakthrough cases from those who had already had SARS-CoV-2 and natural immunity versus those that who had had the vaccine, the recurrent infection rate in those that were naturally immune was 0.08% reacquisition of virus. The vaccinated got Delta strain and this virus at a 7 times higher rate than those who are naturally immune, clearly indicating that natural immunity is a stronger immunity than a vaccine immunity from a leaky vaccine. This is not a sterilizing vaccine. It doesn't give you immunity. You can still get COVID. And the other important thing that the CDC admits they're not doing, other nations are, listen to a great lecture out of the UK today, is the vaccinated can still acquire the virus and can still transmit the virus. At least 25% of those vaccinated are still transmitting virus out of the UK data from yesterday. So these are leaky vaccines. We're trying to force people into an experiment with an investigational vaccine for an investigational vaccine against a virus from a year ago for a new strain that is out now. Now, we can't play this whack-a-mole. Oh, which strain next? We can barely get people, quote, vaccinated now. By the end of the year, maybe we're on strain Zeta of the virus. So what do we need to focus on? We need to focus on early treatment of this virus. And it's widely available, and it's cheap, and it's generic, and that's why it's not approved. Because if there were a treatment for this virus, they cannot have authorization for these vaccines, period. It states, I think about page 3 in the emergency authorization, it states clearly, you cannot authorize this investigational vaccine if there's an effective therapy for this virus. Well, many of my colleagues around the country and myself have worked on early therapies for this virus. Dr. Peter McCullough out of Texas, the most published cardiologist in the world, and the most published cardiologist, or the most published physician on COVID, over 50 articles on COVID this past year, And he has focused on early treatment. The death rate in his cohort and those of us that have used the McCullough protocols is 86% lower than the hospitals, 86% lower. In prevention trials with many of these early treatments and prophylactic treatments out of Argentina, Dr. Carvalho's study showed a 100% prevention of acquisition of SARS-CoV-2 on patients that were on prophylactic ivermectin. And ivermectin has, it's a molecule, so I've been criticized in the media about speaking about this medication. The molecule doesn't read a textbook and say I can only treat parasites. This molecule, and this was a paper in Nature, one of the biggest scientific journals in the world, this molecule has 22 mechanisms of action against SARS-CoV-2, has 7 or 8 antiviral mechanisms, and it has multiple immune modification mechanisms. In Dr. Carvalho's study, 2 months of healthcare workers taking ivermectin once a week, 800 individuals, zero got COVID. In the placebo control group of 400 people, 57% in the placebo group got COVID. That's how effective ivermectin was at preventing acquisition of SARS-CoV-2 in a hospital setting. You can't claim that for these vaccines. You know, these vaccines, you know, they claim 90-95% efficacy. Really what that is, and I could get into statistics, that's risk reduction, your relative risk. What they didn't do, and the FDA failed in this, and they allowed them not to submit the numbers for the absolute risk reduction, the ARR. So it literally takes 120 people to get 2 shots to decrease symptoms in one patient. And so of those 120, how many people are going to end up with autoimmune disease 2 to 3 years down the road? How many are going to end up with cancer 2 to 3 years down the road, or 4 or 5 years? We don't know. But here's what I'm seeing in the laboratory already, and this is very, very concerning. When we give these shots, we can look at the types of white blood cells in the body. We can look at your T cells, your B cells, the ratios. And you have a broad array of immune cells that work together to fight off viruses, to keep cancers in check. We're already seeing the signals in the laboratory of decreases of certain critically important T cells that you need, your innate immune system. It's your Marines of your body, the first ones in, fighting off viruses, fighting off cancers. It's why kids have done phenomenally well and survived this virus at 100% rate statistically this year, because they have an innate T cell immune response that has 2 to 3 times the activity of an adult T cell immune response. They have 2 to 3 times the enzymes that throw the little hand grenades in the cells and blow up the infected cells compared to adults. And that's why kids have done so wonderfully against this virus. But what we're seeing in the laboratory after people get these shots, we're seeing a very concerning locked-in low profile of these important killer T cells that you want in your body. It's almost a reverse HIV. In HIV, you lose your helper T cells, your CD4 cells. In this virus post-vaccine, what we're seeing is a drop in your killer T cells, your CD8 cells. And what do CD8 cells do? They keep all other viruses in check. What am I seeing in the laboratory? I'm seeing an uptick of herpes family viruses. I'm seeing herpes, I'm seeing shingles, I'm seeing mono. I'm seeing a huge uptick in human papillomavirus in the cervical biopsies and the cervical pap smears in women. In addition to that, there's a little infectious, you know, bump the kids get called molluscum contagiosum. What do you need to keep that in check? You need CD8 killer T cells. I am seeing a 20 times increase in individuals over the age of 50 of this little bump and rash. You know, that's innocuous, but what it tells me is the immune status of these individuals who have gotten the shot. We're literally weakening the immune system of these individuals. Now, most concerning of all is there's a pattern of these types of immune cells in the body that keep cancer in check. Well, since January 1, in the laboratory, I've seen a 20 times increase of endometrial cancers over what I see on an annual basis. A 20 times increase. I'm not exaggerating at all, because I look at my numbers year over year. I'm like, gosh, I've never seen this many endometrial cancers before. I'm seeing invasive melanomas in younger patients. Normally, we catch those early, and they're thin melanomas. I'm seeing thick melanomas skyrocketing in the last month or two. I'm already seeing the early signals, and we are modifying the immune system to a weakened state. Great study out of Germany that looked at these profiles on young individuals after the Pfizer, showing this locked in, and we don't know how long. Maybe the immune system, you know, is going to regenerate and those ratios will go back up. but who's studying it? And where are the long-term trials? 2 months, 4 months? How long is this profile locked in? We don't know. And how long is it going to last? 2-3 years? What is going to be the uptick in these solid tumor cancers over the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years? We don't know. I can predict. I'm a data analyst. I'm not a politician. I look at data, and I'm already seeing concerning patterns. And so to say to somebody, in order to maintain your job, you need to put your body at risk and let us change your immune status for potentially a lifetime and put you at risk for autoimmune disease, cancer. Here's a very, very important one. In the Pfizer application to the FDA, now the problem with most of these shots is we didn't do animal trials before doing human trials. The humans essentially were the guinea pigs. And in one of their addendums that they throw in, it shows their study on rats and fertility. And we've heard, you know, inklings within the media and some scientific reporting, well, what's going to be the fertility long-term outcome? The honest answer is we don't know. But in the Pfizer study, the fertility rate was decreased by 16%. Now, 16%, you think, yeah, that's not a whole lot. Well, rats are one of the most fertile creatures on the planet Earth. A 16% decrease in fertility in rats is at least a signal that says to us, we need to be hyper cautious about what we're doing. And again, an experiment on humanity, and to coerce somebody into an experiment in order to keep their gainful employment, it's a violation of all medical ethics. I mean, this is pure malfeasance. From administrators, and I think at some point my physician colleagues may wake up from their stupor and trance that they're in and reflect upon the harm that they're doing upon humanity. You know, we have a mantra, we have a narrative of, oh, suffering, fear, shot. Never in the humanity in the middle of a pandemic have we said, oh, let's vaccinate during a pandemic. No, you literally select for variants when you're vaccinating in the middle of a pandemic. It's immunologically illogical to do something of this sort. And we are doing something that is anti-science. We hear the science this year. Well, I'm a scientist. There's no such thing as the science. If there were the science, we would stop doing science. Science is hypothesizing, theorizing, testing, succeeding, failing, taking that hypothesis and theory and then remodifying and doing something again. That's what we need to be doing. We don't need to be willy-nilly pushing forward with something we don't know the outcomes of and subject people to it. It's unethical. You know, I took an oath to first do no harm, that psychological harm, physical harm, and financial harm to a patient. And I'm calling out my physician colleagues within these large administrations and health system, you are violating your oath. You are violating your oath. You claim to care for humanity, but you are literally taking the opportunity to harm humanity. We're at a pandemic where we're at endemic levels right now. We're in a state of 1.7 million people, and we see maybe 100 cases a day of the virus right now around the state. That's not pandemic levels, that's endemic levels. Is the virus going to be with us? Yes. Well, we need to look at early treatments. We need to look at being honest with the population and give a public health message. Let's take care of our health. Let's optimize our immune health. Let's be less metabolically unwell. Let's focus on natural health, natural immunity. Let's focus on, if you get the virus, we're going to treat you right away. We're not going to send you home and say, okay, in 5, 7, 10 days, when your lips are blue, you come to the hospital. We'll put you on a ventilator, give you a little bit of oxygen, a weak steroid. I'm calling you out on the steroids you're using. You're using the weakest one possible, and you're afraid to look at the protocols of the frontline COVID critical care doctors, FLCCC.net. These are some of the premier critical care doctors in the world. They have protocols. They're saving patients 70, 80, 90% more than you are in your hospitals right now. And you are following the government and the NIH, and you are following very weak protocols, and the government is about 6 to 9 months behind on science, not the science. They're about 6 to 9 months behind. It's time for you in the hospitals to catch up with the protocols that are far more successful than what you are doing. You know, the definition of stupidity is to do the same thing over and over and expect a different result. Well, you know, I've talked to countless patients, and their doctors won't do anything different. They're not being critical thinkers. They're not thinking outside of the box. They're not stepping into these realms of, okay, what we're doing isn't working. We can add this in. There's certainly no harm in doing it. You know, some of these early treatment medications are the safest medicines on the planet. One of them's been around almost 4 decades, the other almost 7 decades. And we have the safety profile, some of the safest drugs on earth, on the WHO's list of most essential, safest drugs necessary for humanity. And we have foolish physicians saying, oh gosh, you know, I need a randomized control placebo trial, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, look, it's a sugar pill if it doesn't work, and it's a lifesaver if it does. And we're ignoring real science, because out of 19,000 patients in studies on ivermectin and, you know, 26, 29 randomized controlled trials, there's a 1 in 4 quadrillion chance, 1 in 4 quadrillion chance statistically that this medication, this molecule, does not have an effect in improving the outcomes in SARS-CoV-2 statistically. The meta-analyses, a meta-analysis is the gold standard in medicine. You have some small trials, you add them all up, and then you look at the statistical power of all those trials put together. The gold standard is a meta-analysis. The meta-analytical data independently done out of 5 nations shows that ivermectin works against SARS-CoV-2. Given late, you decrease death rate by about 68-70%. Given early, you decrease that death rate by 88-96%. So we need to look at early treatments. We need to quit subjecting people to a shot for the witch. Many are dying. Over 9,000 reported to VAERS in the last 6 months, 9,048 deaths reported. That's a red flag system. We're ignoring the forest on fire and the smoke signal. And you cannot approve through the FDA stop valve a vaccine after 25 deaths. That's the FDA stop valve. If they see 25 deaths in a medication, drug, vaccine trial, they pull it. I mean, there may be a reason that they're keeping this as an experiment and as an emergency authorization, because if it were to go for approval, unless they pull some shenanigans, this would be pulled immediately, and should be, in my medical opinion, should be. And we're ignoring the statistics of how well people are doing against this virus. Under age 50, 99.9% survival rate. Those who are passing are ones with comorbidities. And if we did early treatments instead of our abject, weak approach to this virus, that would statistically be about 100% survival under age 50. So we need to have courage, and we need to have logic, and we need to step outside of these realms of coercion, because this is a survivable virus, and we're not getting that hopeful message. And then, and in addition to that, you know, we're getting these, well, gosh, we need to vaccinate the kids. No, we don't. Leave them alone. They survived this at 100%. We are seeing a 200 times increase in young men, increase of inflammation of the heart over baseline, what we would see on an annual basis in North America. Once your heart is damaged, it's damaged for a lifetime. Your heart cells don't grow back. That's scarring that happens next. Don't let your child near these shots. And again, we don't know the long-term immune effects. We don't know the long-term cancer effects. We don't know the long-term fertility effects. Any university that is mandating this for their students, it is criminal. It is criminal. It is criminal. These young, healthy individuals are at no risk for death from this virus. We have treatments, and we are ruining the health of a generation and killing them as well. And this is unethical. This is a violation of all morality, let alone medical ethics. This is immoral. This is immoral. I'm calling you out. This is immoral. Step back and look at the data. Forget the politics. Forget your business. Forget who you think you are. At the end of the day, we're all human. And this is immoral to be doing this to young individuals in our society and our population.
What would you say to the new messaging that is that this new variant is the variant of the unvaccinated?
It's a scariant, and it's a lie. And good, it's a common cold in the unvaccinated. The majority of people, if you're healthy and well, great. It's turning into what all coronaviruses become over time. It's turning into a common cold for most people. If you have risk factors, look, I'm not anti-vaccine. I'm pro good science. You know, your body, your choice. If you want to be a subject in an experiment and you think it's going to be a benefit to you, your body, your choice. Be fully informed of what the risks are. I don't think we need to be coercing people into a shot where one of the potential side effects is death. In order to keep your job, you have to get a shot for the witch. One of the side effects is death. Is that right? That's not moral. That's not ethical. The Delta variant, I call them scary ants. They're 99.7 to 99.9% the same virus. And again, I'll go back to an earlier point. It's a benevolent mutation. It is acting more like a common cold. Why do we have runny nose as one of the symptoms now for this virus? Because it's acting slightly differently. It's weakening. It's not killing people at a higher rate. But those who've been vaccinated are getting Delta at a higher rate than those who have natural immunity. So viruses always mutate, and it's going to be among us for a long time, probably, as an endemic buzz level. So instead of thinking, okay, well, let's chase this variant, this scary ant with a shot. I like to call them same ants. It's the same virus. This isn't SARS-CoV-3 yet. And here's an immune problem. We form an antibody to this virus. An antibody is forever once you form it. If you have a good antibody, fantastic, great. Grandma still has immunity to measles from when she was a kid. But if you form a bad antibody and you do end up with SARS-CoV-3 two, three, 4 years from now, that antibody, and this is called immune priming, you're now primed with an antibody that down the road is your enemy, because now you're immune primed to hyperreact to the next variant of this virus, or this next basically speciation of the virus, the SARS-CoV-3. In the animal trials with SARS-CoV-1, we learned if you vaccinate the animals with a spike protein against SARS-CoV-1, they formed an antibody. Wonderful, great, look, an immune response. However, when they were exposed to wild-type virus down the road, a high percentage of those animals died very quickly. And in another percentage, in a mouse study, they had 100% lung inflammation of a particular type, eosinophil, a type of very inflammatory white blood cell in the lungs of those mice. So you may form an antibody and say, hooray, look, we're forming immunity within this population. But at the end of the day, when exposed to something different enough than what the vaccine was, you are damaging those individuals. We know those signals from SARS-CoV-1. We've seen this in cat coronavirus vaccines, where cats ended up with this horrible inflammation, swelling of the stomach, and about 30% of the cats died. So we know once you prime somebody with an antibody, and that antibody is good, great. But if you prime them with an antibody that is not good, sit back and pull out the popcorn, because we're going to be seeing something horrific happening immunologically to a population down the road. The honest answer is we don't know to what degree, but we do know the history of this, and history is one of the best teachers that we have. It's, let's look at the history of this family of viruses. This isn't influenza. This is not influenza. This isn't a common cold. This is a different family of viruses, and we know our success with other vaccines, with other viruses, that's fine. But this one, we have a very horrific track record with coronavirus vaccines and mammal trials, and there's a reason the FDA never let coronavirus SARS-CoV-1 vaccines come to the market, and never let MERS vaccines come to the market. Every time they saw the signals and they said, this is too dangerous for humanity. Well, this virus is 80% the same as SARS-CoV-1. Why would they not have that same mindset now? We know how horrifically SARS-CoV-1 and MERS vaccines failed. And now, without long-term safety data, we're pushing forward an investigational vaccine on a population without knowing those long-term signals. It's a crime against humanity, period.
It hasn't been lost on me that so many healthcare practitioners, the people who are administering the vaccine or seeing the effects of the vaccine, don't want this shot, right? Even if you're not a data person, you can see that they've made this decision for themselves. They're willing to risk their career over it. They don't want to have the shot. Even if you're not a data person, that should tell you something, very pointed something, that there are certain people who don't want to be an experiment, and maybe somebody should second guess that, right? So what would you say to the healthcare practitioners who are afraid of losing their license, who are afraid of losing their careers, but they want to take a stand and they're looking for some kind of direction? I'm sure they're coming to you like they're coming to me, like they're asking, help me, what do I do, how do I do it, and you know, give me some direction, right? That's what I hear all day long. So what are you saying to people when they're reaching out to you?
Three things. Number one, natural immunity is better than a vaccine immunity. So if you've had SARS-CoV-2 and it's time for the establishment to wake up, it's there. And a lot of healthcare workers have already had SARS-CoV-2. They are more immune than the vaccinated. So that should be equal in this medical social status that they're trying to invoke. If you have had SARS-CoV-2, you have a broader immunity than anyone who's gotten the vaccine because you have antibodies against the spike, the envelope, the membrane, the nucleocapsid. You have hundreds of antibodies compared to maybe dozens from the vaccine. So number one, you have a broader immunity if you've had SARS-CoV-2. Okay, if you haven't, well, there are plenty of people with underlying health conditions. This shot is clearly a contraindication to many people with underlying health conditions as well. Now, I think another important point is many people have religious convictions that, you know, under the Civil Rights Act, you cannot be questioned on your religious convictions. You have a right to refuse based on religious grounds. Pfizer, Moderna don't contain aborted fetal cells, but they were developed on aborted fetal cells. And they were proved and processed on aborted fetal cells. J&J is grown on aborted fetal cells and may contain human DNA as well as human protein per their application to the FDA. J&J has human fetal DNA and protein in it, period. Moderna and Pfizer were developed using aborted fetal cells. I think for many of us that matters. So there's another religious argument. Number one, natural immunity. Number two, plenty of people have underlying health conditions that make them, you know, at a very high increased risk for adverse reactions from these shots. And number three, on religious grounds or on just moral and ethical grounds alone. It doesn't even have to be religious if you're not religious, but on moral and ethical grounds alone, that those three should be an exemption. You need to speak out. You need to stand up. There are those of us fighting this insanity, but you need to join us. And I know we're banding together. But again, moral, ethics, we're throwing them out the window for something we don't know the long-term outcomes for. And this is, it's an absurdity what we're experiencing. It's time for people to wake up. It's time for providers to stand up. And it's time for us to band together.